Hi and welcome to Expert Talk. I'm your host, John Parker. We're going to be looking today around about silverfish and talking about silverfish and how they potentially come into our properties, how can we deal with them, what should we be looking out for, this kind of stuff. And to guide us through this topic, we're going to be joined by Richard Faulkner, who's an advanced technical field consultant. Hi, Rich, how are you?
Hi, John, how are you?
Good, thank you. So, what we're noticing now more and more is that we're getting an increasing amount of inquiries around silverfish. How do we get silverfish into our properties? I think that's probably the best place to start, first and foremost.
So silverfish, firstly, they're a nocturnal insect, believe it or not. They like reasonably sort of damp conditions. A lot of the time when they're getting into buildings, it will be through bird nesting. I know I talk about bird nesting a lot. Bird nesting around our buildings, pretty much when it comes to the secondary, what we call secondary insect infestation, is the root of all evil. It can also be due to our natural sort of management of our gardens and our landscaping outside. If we've got a lot of leaf litter and that stuff near our buildings, lots of sort of vegetation around our buildings, that can be a good area to start looking at, and the management of that to then sort of reduce them coming in.
Okay, so the one thing that really kind of, what they really, really love is damp, dark conditions, don't they?
They do.
Kind of humid kind of areas, right? So, it, you know, it could be the likes of our bathrooms and basements and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would it be fair to say that if I reduce the moisture in these areas, it could have an impact on their infestation size?
Yes, definitely. Again, moisture and dampness is definitely one thing. If we can reduce that, eliminate that, it's going to help control or stop silverfish being present. But as I said, they're nocturnal. They're quite a primitive insect. They exhibit what we call incomplete metamorphosis. So that starts off as an egg. They hatch into a nymphal stage, which is virtually a mini-me. It's a small version of the adult. And then the nymph will feed, it will shed its skin, and it will move up its nymphal stages until it becomes an adult. They're generally sort of what we call a cellulose and a sort of starch feeder. They're like gluten and things like that. So you will get them in any sort of condition where there's moisture and there's a food source.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, you know, the fact that they do feed on the likes of the starches and or cellulose on particular items. That means it kind of opens up potential damage to a lot of different things, doesn't it, like books and photographs and things like that?
Yeah, books, photographs, paintings as well. You'll find that sort of thing anywhere where there's a food source that they can feed on. Naturally, they're going to, and the sort of more food that's available to them, the more likely we are to get a bigger population and infestation of them.
Yeah, so, you know, reading, I've done some a bit of reading around here, and, you know, 60 eggs per day they can lay, so that could lead to a fairly big population.
Yeah, they do. They've got a large turnover. As you said, they've got a huge potential egg production. So if that's happening, then yeah, you can get a population boom quite quickly. And that seems to be what we're seeing a lot more. As you've said, our call outs of silverfish in general are increasing year on year at the moment. And a lot of it's to do with our weather, because our weather now is very, very mild. We're getting very, very little frost. And that's increasing them around in our environment. And then when the weather does get a little bit colder, they're coming in, they're in our buildings. We've got heating, we've got cold weather, we're going to have humidity build up, we're going to get moisture build up, and we're going to get these insects booming.
And what would our customers be looking out for to say, yes, I have silverfish or in my property?
So the main thing with silverfish is actually seeing them. And first of all, you sort of really need to know what you're looking at. So I said they're a nocturnal insect. They're anything from about 13 to 25 millimeters. So they're up to an inch long. So they can get quite big insects. They're sort of a silvery gray in color, and they're quite wide at the top, and they taper down, which is where they get the fish name, because they've got almost like a fish shaped body. They have very long antennae at the head, and they've got three, what we call cerci, three sort of bristle tails that stick out the back of them. And they're very, very distinctive from that point of view. So it's really seeing them. And it was interesting earlier when you were talking about bathrooms. My journey with silverfish started when I was a child, believe it or not. We used to go and stay with my nan in Cornwall on sort of Easter and summer holidays, which was glorious if the weather was good. If it was bad, then we'd be spending a lot of time inside at my nan's. And I spent hours happily catching silverfish and keeping them in matchstick boxes when I was a child, which is probably where the whole interest in insects really started.
Okay, so they're inside. We've kind of looked at how we can identify them, potentially where we find or where they come from, the areas that we might find them. We already have talked about the damage that they can do. They love damp, warm environments, right? So one of the great things that we can do is managing the moisture content within, and that will have an impact on the population. But what else could we really do to try and help control these issues?
So, as I said, you can put in dehumidification, you can look at raising heating if there is an issue. You can also open windows, airflow, look at ventilation of the building, getting that structurally sorted, thorough hoovering. Bathrooms, I would advise if you've got a carpeted bathroom, some people do have, removing the carpet, replacing it with tile or something like that, which again is easier to clean. It's not going to cause such a buildup of starches and it's not going to hold moisture. But again, just hoovering, removing any potential food sources is really, really important.
And like, you know, removing the food sources can be quite difficult, can't it? Because if we're talking about starches here, cellulose, so it's the only way really to stop that kind of growth and access to that is really removing the moisture, removing the humidity. And if you've got old books, just make sure you're keeping an eye on them and kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But again, hoovering, as you said, it's cellulose that they're mainly food on, and they're actually able to digest it themselves. They've got actually quite a complex, for a simple insect, they've got quite a complex digestive system, and they actually can produce and change cellulose into cellulase. It's very, very complicated. But as you said, it's not just the things like starches and adhesives and stuff like that they can feed on. That's why they're associated with books and book binding. But they will also be able to feed on the bonding in carpets, certain items of clothing they'll be able to use as a food source, coffee, dandruff and hair, believe it or not, glue. And also, as we said earlier, and you've said with the photos, paper, some paints as well. And also certain wall plasters, again, if they're damp, and sugars. So there's a plethora of stuff that they can feed on. They're also feed on other dead insects. They can feed on cottons, linens and silks as well as sort of any sort of leftover crumbs that they find. And they're also, through the life cycles, we said they need to shed their exoskeletons, shed their skins in order to grow. They will also eat their shed exoskeletons, which a lot of insects do. So there's a whole range of food sources that way. So cleaning, as well as taking away the humidity, and then doing things like sealing up any sort of cracks, crevices, removing carpet in sort of rooms that will get damp or humid, like bathrooms, is really, really important.
Yeah, and I suppose there's other things as well that if they do become an ongoing problem, even though you're cleaning and you're doing all the other things that you should be doing, I suppose you could bring in people to do like heat surveys, ventilation surveys, things like
that. Yeah, and then, the structure and stuff of the building is really important, yeah.
And then I suppose from a pest control point of view, we can control the numbers via spraying insecticides and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. It's all the stuff you've said, looking at the proofing and sealing of the areas, and then using a chemical to knock down the population. So yeah, and it is the thing with them, they are what we call a public health pest, but they're more of a household nuisance than anything else. They're not known to transmit any diseases, but it is just the nuisance of them running about.
I suppose really if they're going to be kind of any kind of pest, or any kind of contamination is going to be more biological contamination by falling into things rather than actually contaminated through a pathogen or something like that.
Yeah, totally. And for an insect, they're quite interesting because a lot of the public health insects we deal with, especially when we're looking at store product insects, flies have quite a short lifespan, but the silverfish can live up to 3 years. So you've got 3 years. If you said once they hit adulthood, they can be laying, certain species will be laying up to 60 eggs a day. So it's quite a potential massive population that if left unchecked can sort of breed and then start doing quite a lot of damage.
Well, thank you very much, Rich. I think we've covered everything that we need to cover there. So thank you very much for joining me today.
No worries.
And thank you for listening to our Expert Talk podcast.